Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, or maybe not always, He could be my former friend, potentially a replicant friend. Frank, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, bud. How are you?
I'm fairly good. I'm not sure how much information I should give you, because I'm not really sure if you are who you say you are.
I'm not sure I can trust you.
Interesting. Well, this is going to be a very standoffish podcast, is it not?
It is, isn't it?
I'll ask you this very, very calmly. If a man gives you a kitten in the rain, how much money do you have in your bank account?
Enough to buy two beers.
You are not a replicant. Wonderful. Mm-hmm, what beer are you drinking?
I am drinking the Down the Road Rosenmeier Kolsch. Once again, you introduced me to this beer, and in this case, literally the next day, I went out and bought some for myself.
That is, you know, we don't always say go out and buy the beer that we're drinking. Go out and buy that beer.
It's damn good.
Yeah.
It is damn good. If you can find it, Down the Road Beer Company, Rosenmeier Kolsch.
You got a giant ease on down the road.
Very good.
To buy some Kolsch, it will satisfy. Oh, yeah. Ease on down the road.
Very nice.
Yeah.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking a Harpoon Sweet Spot.
Mm-mm-mm.
Because it is actually really hitting the spot.
It's hitting the sweet spot, right?
This is aptly named beer.
It's nice and light. It's
kind of complex all at the same time.
It's got a good flavor to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't taste like a lighter beer. You know, it's not super heavy in terms of the alcohol content,
nope,
but
crisp. It's good for fall weather, but it's not so heavy that you're like, it's not November.
Yeah.
Coming into December weather. This is good. This is exactly what I wanted.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Cool, cool, cool.
You know what I didn't want?
What?
To watch Blade Runner. You know what I did?
Watch Blade Runner. So I did watch it.
For the first time.
We talked about it, and we decided this is the thing we should talk about because Blade Runner 2049 is coming.
Is here.
It's here.
Yeah.
Time for
us to talk about
Get on the Train.
This very seminal science fiction.
It is.
Classic
the
Blade
acclaimed,
Runner.
The acclaimed film. I had never seen it. I watched what's called the final cuts.
Yep, that's what I watched too.
Now, after having seen it, I did go and look at, you know, what are the differences between the theatrical cut and the final cut. We can talk about some of that.
Yeah, please. I don't know any. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, great. So we'll touch on that.
I've only ever seen the final cut, which surprised me was only, it's still under 2 hours.
Yes.
It doesn't feel that way.
Way longer.
Yeah.
So this was... I didn't love it, to be honest. It's not one of my favorite sci-fi movies. You know, like it does feel very much of its time and very much of it, you know, of the Ridley Scott style.
Oh, it's definitely a Ridley Scott film.
It's
slow and looks great.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Right.
That's Ridley Scott movie to a T.
To a T. I mean, and it's only 4 or 5 years after Alien. Like, he was in the same headspace, but exploring a different, slightly different sort of universe. But it's definitely from the same guy. You can still tell the same guy.
It does explore a lot of this, like, not similar themes necessarily, but you've got, like, robots that look like people.
Mm-hmm,
and, like,
mm-hmm.
if aliens happening in space, you could change a couple things around, and Blade Runner could exist in the same world that Alien exists in.
It would not be a stretch.
It would not
be much of a stretch.
Not really.
No. It does have that sort of Alan Moore, 80s England feel to it of like the...
Is that because you just watched Judge Dredd?
Probably. And you know, the world in Judge Dredd looks like this to an extent.
Yep.
It has a... has a little bit of like a film noir twang.
Definitely.
You know? So it's definitely. It's like a film noir.
It's a futuristic
detective.
Film noir, which is a great concept.
Yes.
Possibly the first of its kind. I think it is. I think it's one of the reasons it's a big deal.
I can't think of one before it. I'm struggling to think of one since.
It's been emulated. Well, the look of Blade Runner, at least, and sometimes even the pace or whatever has been emulated many times.
But can you think of another film noir mystery?
Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kid's show.
Yeah, you're right.
Strictly speaking, if you watch Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, mm-hmm, which is the film, it's not Blade Runner with Batman by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but
it is a futuristic Blade Runner-esque detective mystery story.
That's true.
And I know it's a cartoon and whatever else, but I didn't think of it until just now. I was like put on the spot and you said, and this is, because the thing I think of more first is the very recent, which I did not see, Ghost in the Shell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you look at the design of that world, even in the trailers, whatever else. And I know it's based off of Ghost in the Shell and blah, blah, blah. But it looks like Blade Runner.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess there probably are many, many. There probably are many other movies that kind of take that template of like.
Sure.
Futuristic mystery. But this does it in a very Sam Spade type of way. Like, mm-hmm, you know, this Gumshoe. Is like. Yeah, Bogart type of, yep. You know.
Yeah.
It has that sensibility.
You're hunting Maltese Falcons or you're hunting replicants.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very similar in that sense. So I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yep.
But overall, you know, I think really more than anything, I am not really cut out for Ridley Scott's slow-paced,
uh-huh,
I'm going to like dole it out in little micro hits.
Uh-huh.
And for me, I feel like I am just not wired that way with the expositions and the reveals that happened. So that happens slowly, like every 10 minutes something is revealed and it's supposed to shock you. And I think what's supposed to happen is like the tension keeps ratcheting up and you're more and more intrigued. But for me, it's just sort of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's happening too. Okay.
So let me ask you something. What is the story of this movie? Because apart from Harrison Ford's Deckard, He is a Blade Runner who hunts replicants because of some uprising on the moon or whatever, you know, and some of them have. What is the story of this movie besides Rutger Hauer's character being like, I want to live forever because replicants have a limited lifespan? Like, it's got like little things like, oh, there's the girl who is a replicant and doesn't know, and he's a dude, and you are doing a thing, and everyone's doing a thing, but I'm not really sure what all those things have in common to get to the end, where all of a sudden I'm watching Harrison Ford battle Rutger Hauer in the rain, and I'm like, wow, this looks cool. I don't know why they're fighting. You know? Like, I don't know where it all lines up, and I've seen this movie a few times.
Okay.
And I'm a smart person.
I'm
a fairly intelligent person. I followed things that are more complicated than Blade Runner.
That is true. I'm actually, yeah.
And I have no idea what I'm supposed to be watching in this movie, apart from what I just said.
So, they're in the future.
Okay.
These Blade Runners, who are like cops that are meant to hunt down these, mm-hmm, the replicants.
Yep.
One of them is Deckard. Harrison Ford, is on a mission to find these four specific replicants who have like stowed away or something, and they're back on Earth instead of being off on the off-world colony.
That's it.
That's it. I'm not even started. Oh, no. I haven't even gotten started
that's
yet.
It. I was like, oh, okay, because some of those four people are like Rutger Hauer and that other girl. And like, okay. That's it.
That's what I needed to know. They are on a mission to. I'm going to continue though, even though that's what you're missing. I'm still going to, by all means.
Because
now at this point, I want you to tell me, if I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
So there's the off-world colony that's sort of like where they're trying to send everybody, but it seems like it's also sort of the elite thing of like you need to be rich to go there. The replicants are basically robots that look like people. You can't tell they're not people unless you like. Put them through a very rigorous questioning and hope that they fail the Turing test, basically.
Yep. Some weird questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they they like killed a bunch of people in the off-world colony.
Yes,
and then
that's
came
right.
back. Mm-hmm. So Deckard basically one by one picks them off and gets the leader, who's Rutger Hauer. And there's a little bit of a sort of, join me and we'll rule the galaxy as father and son type of thing.
Yep.
Meanwhile, he encounters,
Deckard
encounters another female replicant.
Yep.
Rachel, who is so convincing that it's hard. It was actually very hard for even him to tell that she was a replicant.
That's right.
But he figured it out.
Because the company has deemed it so. She's an experiment.
Right. She's an experimental one who's, Most of the replicants have a 5 or 5 year lifespan and then they like shut down.
Yep.
And these four who committed like the murder on the colony are trying to live forever.
Okay.
And they go to like the creator or whatever and try to make him give them immortality. He's like, no. So they kill him.
Dr. Terrell.
Right.
Who,
Terrell Corporation.
Fun fact, is the bartender in The Shining.
Oh, cool.
The guy that's like, you need to, like, not the waiter in the bathroom, like, I corrected them.
Okay.
Not that guy.
Okay.
Because that guy's awesome. I love that scene. One of the best scenes in all of film history. The best, Jerry. The best. Banyan from Seinfeld.
Okay.
I was just watching Lois and Clark last night. He was in an episode of Lois and Clark, and I was like, oh, it's Banyan.
Oh, it is Banyan. Yes, Banyan.
But anyway, that guy is the bartender
okay.
where he's like, of course, Mr. Torrance.
Terrell. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So Dr. Terrell.
These are the things I needed to get through the movie.
Yes. To like keep you strung along for One Piece the next. Mm-hmm. So
I have another one of those coming up when you mention that character, which I think is real fun. So continue.
I hope I do mention that.
I will correct you if you don't.
Thank you. That was good. In the end, they have this epic battle, Deckard and the Rutger Hauer character.
Okay.
And obviously Deckard being the hero wins.
Yep.
At the end of the film, he wants to like run off with Rachel. Maybe this is the character you're thinking of, but what's his name or what's his, who is it? I'm going to do my game. Use a lookup.
Nope. I can do it.
I recognize, man. Oh,
you're talking about Sebastian, like the guy who makes the little robots.
In the end, this is so going to bother me. Well, no, it's Edward James Olmos, I think.
Okay.
It's Edward James Olmos' character. Yes.
Okay.
Who, gives Deckard a little origami
crane.
Unicorn. And
that's right.
Earlier in the film, Deckard had a dream about a unicorn. A seemingly nonsensical, out of place dream about a unicorn.
Yes,
you're like,
that's right.
Why are they showing us this weird dream he's having? What the hell? Like, what the hell, Ridley Scott? What are you
hell?
Doing? What the hell, Ridley Scott? If you're paying attention, you know that Deckard earlier was able to figure out that Rachel was a replicant because he was able to tell her some of her own memories from her life.
That's right.
And she's like, how do you know that? And he's like, well, because you're a replicant. I know the program. Like, yep. I know what memories are programmed into you. So Edward James Olmos is telling him in a subtle way,
you're also a replicant.
I know about your dream. There's no way anyone could know about your dream other than me. I'm telling you in a subtle way, here's the origami thing. And he just sort of like, he sees the unicorn. He's like, got it. He pieces it all together. And they run off together.
Yep.
And that's how the final cut ends.
Yep.
Is
that scene not in the original?
It is, but there's more after it in the original.
So the final cut has less stuff?
In a manner of speaking, yes. It's a leaner cut because they didn't think people would get it.
Okay.
The ending is a little different in the theatrical. In the theatrical cut, arguably Deckard is not a replicant.
Right. Well, that's why I knew that there's a debate, like, is he or isn't he? Because what cut do you actually follow?
Right. So
I guess Blade Runner 2049 will answer that question.
Yes. Now, Ridley Scott has come out and said, definitively, Deckard is a replicant.
Well,
he
did the final cut, so.
Right. Right. Yeah. Theatrical cut, they added a scene right after that where they are driving off, literally, in a convertible, driving off into the sunset And most of the film, by the way, has, in the theatrical cut, narration from Harrison Ford, like explaining everything that's happening.
Really?
So it's very descriptive, apparently.
Maybe I should have watched that version.
I watched on YouTube. No, it sounds like it's painful.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah.
Can't be that painful because the movie's
it was still a classic, it's this great thing.
Yeah.
But like compared to the final cut is like this, like it's like
that's very
a smarter cut. Yeah, it is very noir-y, and that's why that's like very again Bogart.
Yep.
Like of all the gin joints and all the wild shit to walk into mine. Like it's that kind
of
thing.
Of all the low main shacks and all of this place you had to come to mine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in the end, they're seen driving off into the sunset in a convertible. And I guess they used footage from like another movie or something.
Oh.
Because they were like that desperate at the end to like make this make sense. And he explains in voiceover that like they lived happily ever after type of thing.
Whoa.
Which is very different than.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know if it's kind of a somber
ending.
You don't know if they live.
Right.
Like you just see them run away and you don't see what happens after that. You're just like, it's up to you to decide whether they live or die, whether he's a replicant or not. Like it's pretty clear he is, but you know, it's a little open-ended. But it's pretty definitive in the theatrical cut from what I'm trying to understand. You can see the final scene of it in the like on YouTube.
Show notes.
But yeah, so it's very different tone in the end, and you can tell it's not what Ridley Scott would have wanted.
Yeah.
That's not him at all to have a happy ending.
No.
Yeah. So it is a different ending.
He can give a hopeful ending, but he doesn't give happy endings. Mm-hmm. Though there are two different things.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I found that very interesting. I was personally glad that I watched the final cut instead of the theatrical cut. Just because I felt like that was more satisfying to me.
Sure.
To have there be that sort of, I mean, not strictly satisfying in the sense of like, here's a very satisfying ending for you, but in the sense of like more stimulating, more intellectually stimulating to be able to like, I have to do some thinking and I had to piece it together myself and it left me like stroking my chin and being like, what happened after? Like, oh, okay, I guess all this, you know, that's why they showed us the dream before, blah, blah, blah. Things that were, it's the kind of movie that I feel like will make a lot more sense second time through.
Yeah, I've seen this movie a few times.
I know.
You know what? I don't know what it is about it either, because I think it's well documented on here that that I like sci-fi. I don't love sci-fi.
Right.
I don't consider in my brain superheroes are not sci-fi. They're superheroes. They're not necessarily connected with one another. But this is very like heady sci-fi.
It is. It's very, very almost too much for me.
Yeah,
and you know, that's kind of on the cusp of too much for me.
Yeah, that's not my taste. And Ridley Scott is either I love the film or I don't like it at all. There's no like I love Alien, I love Gladiator. I love The Martian. I hate Gods and Kings. I hate Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
I hate it.
Oh wow.
I hate it. And not because I don't think it's well made. I think it's well made. I think it looks great. I think it did wonderful things for the industry and for the genre. And I think the like a noir sci-fi is great idea. And I think the story is even a good idea. Like all that is fine, but there's just something in me that I just can't get over in this movie and I just hate it. It's like it doesn't make me mad in the way that like I don't know, like Batman and Robin makes me mad or whatever, something like that. Like, no, you're doing it wrong. Like, I can see, like, you're doing it right. It's just not for me.
Okay.
And so, but there's, because it's such like a, this is for geeks and you shall love it because it's so important. Don't care.
Interesting. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. It's very much in the middle for me. Kind of how I feel about Alien. How do you feel about Alien? Do you love Alien, hate Alien?
I love Alien.
You love Alien.
I love Alien.
See, that's so, to me, that's like almost inconsistent. I mean, I'm not criticizing you. I'm just like, I'm surprised.
But it is inconsistent.
But I'm more surprised than anything where I'm like, I would think that however you feel about Alien, you would feel about this movie.
Okay, so I think I can answer this.
Okay.
Alien is, one, not a confusing story. It's okay. Straightforward.
Yeah, true.
There's a monster on board, and we got to kill it before it kills us.
Sure, okay, that's straightforward.
It's not a confusing story. You can pop it in and like do your work at the same time, and you might not be scared because you're looking at other things, but at least you can do something else.
Okay,
I'm
not sure I agree with that, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe because I've seen it a few times.
Maybe
not the first time I wouldn't do that, but Alien. I also like monsters.
Okay, that is a key difference.
And a xenomorph or an alien that's trying to kill you is nothing but a monster. It's just a monster in space. Okay. You know, it's like Jaws. It's the same idea.
Yeah,
it's a shark, but it's a monster. It's a really smart shark.
It's in space instead of the ocean.
Right. And so I like that aspect of it. For some reason, I like people hunting for things, whether it's treasure or animals or monsters are hunting them. There's something about that I enjoy. Because if I was like to list like just very things that movies that I enjoy based like that, Alien, Jaws, The Ghost in the Darkness, Lake Placid, you know, even if some of them are not great movies or even good movies, I enjoy them because I like that like hidden aspect of the creature and it's coming to get you and you don't know where it is. And I'm a big scaredy cat, but for whatever reason, like that interests me.
So do you like monster movies as a genre? Like you like Universal monster movies, right?
Yeah, I do like the Universal
do
monster movies.
Do you like sort of schlocky, you know, low budget horror or not horror, but monster movies specifically?
Yeah,
like
kinda.
Godzilla or King Kong or
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not my favorite
Harryhausen
genre.
type stuff.
Yeah, they're not my favorite genre, but a good Harryhausen movie that's just like there's a giant skull cave and there are dinosaurs everywhere and like that's fun to me.
Okay.
It's like it's a good time. And so if you take that monster thing and turn it into and you turn it into a bit of a horror movie this movie or a coming of age tale
or
whatever.
Give it a little more of a harder edge. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, coming of age.
Yeah,
different.
Okay. Something like that. Then I am interested and I'm with you.
Okay.
I like noir stuff, but it's not my go-to.
Sure.
And then so, like, it depends what it is. So, like, I love Batman, and I love noir Batman, but I like Batman with it or without the noir.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, the noir is like a fun add-on. It's not what draws me to the character.
Have you ever seen, like, Maltese Falcon or Casablanca?
Yeah.
Or...
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure. And they're fine.
Okay.
They're good.
They're fine.
They're fine.
They're fine.
No, well, they're not. They're really well made movies.
Okay.
They're just not
for you.
They're just not for me. They're just not what interests me.
That's
I don't really care for gumshoe stuff.
Yeah.
I love like that's why remember when we talked about Jessica Jones and everything like that, and I'm like, I like Daredevil more than Jessica Jones.
See, and I like Jessica Jones because
you're a little bit more invested in that gumshoe.
I am. I hadn't really thought about it as noir, but it does actually have some noir sensibilities. Now that I really stop and think about it, it does.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, she's a private detective.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It comes with the territory.
Totally. I just hadn't thought about it in that sense at all because it is so modern and she has all these problems that like these detectives and noir stories typically don't.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I like it and I like sometimes I enjoy watching it, but then if like Blade Runner was say like less complicated.
Okay.
In its own way, or maybe it just moved a little faster.
Yeah, that's my main thing with Ridley.
Yeah,
is that his stuff needs to move a little faster.
Yeah,
for my taste.
I just might enjoy it a little bit more because I like a good mystery. So like, it's a weird. There's this weird interest. You know, something's weird. There's like this weird intersect that just doesn't fully add up. It's almost like I almost equate Blade Runner with Doctor Who in my mind. Like it's got all of these things that I do like. But I just don't like it.
The elements are there, but the execution doesn't do it for you.
Yeah, and that's Blade Runner for me. Mm. So I can sit back and recognize why it's important, but that doesn't mean I want to watch it ever again.
Sure, sure.
And I want to see Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Because I think it looks great.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it looks super interesting.
I think it does too, actually. I think it looks more interesting than this.
Agreed.
I hope that's not just the marketing hype, you know, getting carried away. But
well, maybe it's a different director. I don't know. Jared Leto was blind through the whole movie.
That's a whole other
Jared Leto. He bought contacts that blocked out his vision.
I know. I know. I hope he didn't send anybody used
beads.
Anything. Products.
Products.
Yeah.
Probably not, because that's not maybe not what this character would do.
I know.
But I just like just show up to set like a normal person.
Just do your job. Just do your job. Like you don't have to be a jerk. You don't have to be an ass. Just do your damn job.
Go ahead and say something.
No, that's it. That's really all I had to say on Leto.
Oh, okay.
It's just like I'm fed up with his like, oh man, yeah, it's like method acting. No, you're just a jerk. You're just looking for excuses to be a weirdo.
I am going to take this Jared Leto thread and move it back to Blade Runner and Batman at the same time. Can you follow me here?
Yes, please do.
Jared Leto played the Joker.
Yes.
The Joker is a Batman villain.
Yes.
There is a Batman ally in this movie.
Okay. Was this whatever character you'd hoped I'd mention that I didn't?
Yes, and you didn't mention him.
Sorry.
That's okay. I only figured it out from the voice. So there's the character J.F. Sebastian is the guy that makes like the little toys.
Yeah.
He's got all these robots and he's like, oh yeah, I'm 25, but I'm much older because of these problems and blah, blah, blah.
He's the one that welcomes the replicants into his home.
Yeah, he's got
Daryl Hannah.
He's got a bit of a southern accent. I mean, he's got a big southern accent.
Yeah,
he's got a big old Memphis drawl. That lovely person, that lovely actor,
yeah,
William Sanderson,
yeah,
played a character in Batman the Animated Series called Dr. Rossum.
Oh,
used his own voice. Dr. Rossum was part of the oh my god, now it's out of me. Remember when Batman was a robot? Do you remember that episode where he like tore his scarf? He's like, oh, I'm a robot.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
And it starts with a name. It's like Hadron or Had It or something like. I can't. Can you? Somebody look it up. Somebody. Type in Dr. Rossum, Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Oh, wait, animated series?
Yeah, Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So he was part of this thing where like the computer.
Hardak,
thank you. Hardak was basically like Hal.
Okay,
like I'm becoming sentient and you work for me and the robots. And so Dr. Rossum helps Batman stop Hardak. Robots becoming human. They think they're human. You get where I'm going.
I see the similarities. Yeah.
He comes back later in a couple episodes later, maybe the next season, whatever. They go to his house. All he has is little toys of everything
everywhere. Wow.
Like these little robot toys. He makes Batmite and he's got this little Batmite toy and whatever else. And that character is 100% made because of Blade Runner.
Totally.
Because it's the same act. They were like, oh, we need this character to do this. Wouldn't it be great if we got the guy who with the toys from Blade Runner? How amazing would that be?
Totally.
And it's great. And I didn't get it until I watched this movie. And I was like, oh, why? This show is so smart.
Yes.
And Blade Runner, I guess, is also smart.
It definitely is smart.
It is.
It definitely is smart because I do think that a lot of people could see the ending of this movie and not get the unicorn thing.
Definitely.
Right. I think I could go over your head and you'd be like, that was just a confusing movie.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand what's happening.
I mean, I just watched this 2 days ago and I already forgot that he was given a unicorn.
Okay. But you did get he's supposed to be rapping.
Well, that's like ingrained in pop culture. Right. So like I knew it through the whole movie,
but that aside, like, hey, maybe you knew because everyone knows.
I think I got it the first time I watched it. I mean, this is probably the maybe third, fourth, fifth time I've seen the film. I still don't like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
that's more than I give you a lot of credit because I would not watch a movie that I dislike that many times.
I watch it at different stages, you know, because it's like Doctor Who. I keep going back to it thinking, Maybe this time I'll be lucky. Maybe this time it'll stick. and it doesn't. But that's okay. You're not meant to like everything. But at least I can recognize why it's important.
Right.
And I recognize that it's really well made. The cinematography in this movie is beautiful.
It's amazing.
The way that it plays with color and natural light. And it's so, that bit is so well executed. I don't love the giant pyramid in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
It's almost a confusing layout. Did you know the guy that the production designer on this movie is the production designer on Back to the Future?
That actually kind of makes sense.
Because
if you
look at Deckard's car, it's basically the DeLorean.
And also, like, if you look at Back to the Future, you know, 2.
Yep.
Like the future, the gritty future of 1985.
Yeah.
Or 2015.
Yep.
Like,
it's Blade Runner-esque.
Yeah. It definitely has. You can definitely see where the same person came to those different conclusions a few years apart.
Yep. Agreed. You know? Yep.
So, yeah, that makes sense. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
but even the
doors are like Lamborghini doors or whatever. They're not DeLorean doors, but they go up.
Yeah, they don't
go to the side. They go up.
Yep,
and
yep.
There's all that there. I almost also feel like there's some. Anton First was not the production designer of this film, but if watching this movie, I'd be like, you take out Like, that, maybe that's where the Batman Beyond thing came from in my mind. But I was like, it kind of felt like a Tim Burton world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Tim Burton made a future world, like, and he grabbed Anton first, this is what they'd come up with.
Sure.
This is what it, that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I also have to say the effects in this movie actually hold up remarkably well. Remarkably well. And I don't think they were really redone.
I don't think so.
I don't think they really were.
Sometimes redone effects look worse.
Yeah. Yeah, because sometimes...
1997 released Star Wars.
Exactly. Like, sometimes the CG Banthas don't look as good as the original original Banthas. And even the, like, things of, like, the car flying around and stuff like that looks pretty good.
It's pretty darn good.
You know, I... yeah, I feel like... I meant to mention that back when we did our Judge Dredd episode, too. Like, those effects actually are pretty
solid. Still pretty great. Yeah, some green screen stuff. But apart from that, it's good.
It occurs to me, watching Blade Runner and then watching Judge Dredd, how relatively few advancements there were in special effects between 1982 and 1995 compared to 1995 compared to today.
Ah, so true.
You know?
Like, the difference between 82 and 85... Or 82 and 95, and even 95 to 2005.
Sure.
That's huge. There's a huge.
Huge
leap forward. That's because it's after Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Which is the CG essence.
Lord of the Rings and Matrix. Matrix kind
of. Yeah, you're right. Matrix.
Needs credit for that too.
Yeah, there. Now, anywhere between 99 and 2001, there was the shift in, oh my God, we can do this.
And let's not forget that that's the reason why George Lucas made the prequels.
Right.
Because he felt like finally technology has caught up to, you know, he spent the intervening years from 83 to 99, or really 96, 97 when the special edition came out, pushing the state of the art forward in the movies he was producing.
Right.
So that he could make Star Wars when he felt like it lined up with
some
what he
of
needed.
It still looks good.
Yeah.
Again, we said this in our Star Wars episode a couple weeks ago, but swimming to the Gungan city and stuff like that, that still looks good.
Still looks good.
Not all of it does.
But then even things like Jurassic Park looks good. Original Jurassic Park.
Well, that
looks good.
Agreed. But that's also because it's a very limited amount and a lot of effort and time is put into a very limited amount of shots as opposed to making the
whole world
movie.
Or a whole
that's totally. That's the difference.
It's true, but that it composites really well and
the key.
That movie magic that like plays tricks on your eyes and you're like, I know this isn't possible. I know dinosaurs can't be roaming the earth alongside man, and yet I'm seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
What is this witchcraft, you know?
Yep.
And so this movie does that really well, where you're sort of like, I know this can't be real, but it looks so real. They don't look like models. I know they must be models, but they don't look like them. And there's some, you know, whatever, you see some outlines, or you see like some things where the perspective looks off because like, well, you wouldn't be the same that size. Something looks slightly, you know, Uncanny Valley, whatever. But but it's not like watching CG where you're like, well, I know everything here must be fake.
Yeah.
I know that like this room that Star-Lord is standing in must be fake.
It's funny that you say that because like watching Blade Runner, I'm looking at this world, I'm looking at the flying cars, and I'm like, 1982, I don't know how you did that.
Yeah, I know, right?
I have no idea how you made it look like that.
That's
I watch a movie today, I'm like, I know exactly how you
did
that.
Right.
But that's what maybe got me through the movie a couple of times, is kind of looking at it and being like, wow, how did you do this? Like, how did
that,
you actually
do this? That wonder
and
awe, I feel like, is something that's sort of missing today, because we know that if we can't explain it, it came from a computer. And while that's not easy to do, I couldn't do it if I tried, it's an easy explanation.
And
it's a simpler explanation of, like, a computer did it, rather than, well, we had this pulley that we rigged, and we did this and that, and we, you know, like, we had to physically create a miniature of this in a way that looked real and replicated the physics of it, blah, blah, blah.
It's funny that you say that, because, like, there are some things even today that you would assume are a computer that aren't. For instance, the end of Batman Begins, all right?
Okay.
Batman's, I don't have to save you. And then he flies away.
Yeah.
And Rachel goes like, oh my God, this train's going to crash. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Train crashes into the parking area and blows up. 100% real effect.
A miniature or like a...
It is a 1/6 model of a train.
Okay, so it's a miniature.
It is a miniature. Not one bit of CG in any of that shot. They crashed a fairly giant toy train.
Yeah, yeah.
And blew it up. And that's that.
And
for years,
mm-hmm.
you would assume that was a computer.
Absolutely.
That's a computer.
Yeah.
Not one bit of computering.
But yet the knowledge that it could be makes you assume it all is.
Which takes away the movie magic.
Takes away the movie magic. When we didn't know how it could possibly be done. Like, I guess it's some kind of miniature, but God, how did you do that?
That's the magic of Star Wars.
That's the magic of Star Wars.
I still don't know how those ships fly in space. I mean, I do, but I don't.
But I kind of don't. Or even just the fact, even if I do know, it's like, oh my God, how in 1976 did you create a computer that could fly the camera past the model of the Millennium Falcon in that precise movement over and over again to get that exact shot? How did you do that in 1976?
Yep.
Like, how?
Yep.
You know, even when it was a computer, it's like, how did you do that? Today, it's sort of taken away because we've seen so many, like, over-the-top incredible things that it's sort of like nothing surprises us anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, I know someone did that with a computer. And again, I'm not trying to... that takes months and months and months of work, and it's not an easy thing to do. It's not something that just happens overnight. But what I'm saying is the explanation is a simpler explanation.
Right.
Than...
Or we assume it's a simpler explanation. Or
we assume it is. So we assume that all the effects are done that way. And when we're told, like, you know, not as many effects are digital as you think... Part of really, they're doing a really good job because we can't tell where the digital stuff starts and ends.
Right.
Which is a testament to it. But
which is its own movie magic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's one of those things that when it calls attention to itself, it can be super obvious.
There's something about the wonder of people working with their hands and creating something as opposed to working with their keyboards.
I guess that's what I'm saying. And I say that as somebody who works with a keyboard every single day of my life.
And I can't do either of them.
Right.
But so I in my own way are equally impressed because the computer involves physics in some way just as much as doing it in real life, you know, but you know, to get weight and ratio and, you know, all that and stuff like that. Right. But there's something about watching, say, Blade Runner and being like, what? How did you make this sprawling metropolis?
Right.
How did you, in the film Metropolis, how did you make this sprawling metropolis?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mirrors. Right. They did it with mirrors. But that's super cool. Why? I would never think of that in a million years.
I think there is something to be said for if some reasonably famous director were to decide, I'm going to make an action movie or a sci-fi movie or something the way we used to do it.
Yep.
Like if someone decided, like made a point of saying, like, we're going to do this without CG, and that's like the mission of the movie, and like it was marketed that way and all that kind of stuff, I think there would be something there. Kind of like when they made The Force Awakens, they made a point of saying, like, hey, BB-8 is practical, and like all these things are practical. There's obviously CG in this movie, but we want you to know that like a lot of this stuff is actually practical because they knew that there was so much of a stigma from the prequels of everything is CG.
Right.
And maybe that wasn't true, but that was the sense. That was the perception. So they came out and like showed BB-8 roll out on the stage at Star Wars Celebration. They're like, look, he's a real thing. In fact, you can buy one, a miniature that works the same way the big one works.
Yep. I mean, even if you watch giant films, something like Interstellar, and you're like, okay, it's a space movie, most of that are real effects. The way things move, the places they are, all of that stuff are real places. Even, spoiler for the end of Interstellar, but like that big library chasm thing he's in, that's a set. It's not CG. It's a set that he hung in and actually interacted with and moved around and plucked at and all this stuff. He was in a giant building on wires. Like that's... But you would not ever assume something like that. So it's almost in people's best interest now to find out how films are made.
Yeah.
And that's how you get wonder and awe.
There used to be such a big sense of wonder and excitement around seeing like the, you know, how this movie got made special that would be on TV.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like on a DVD extra or Blu-ray extra or whatever. But you get a lot less of that or a lot less detail into it. One of my favorite, actually, and this is still with CG, one of my favorite of those like mini documentaries that's on the Star Wars Episode II DVD, Blu-ray, whatever. I think it might only be on the DVD. It might not be on the Blu-ray. It's called From Puppets to Pixels. Mm. And it shows how they went from puppet Yoda to CG Yoda from Episode 1 to Episode 2.
Wow.
And, you know, say what you will about how Episode 2 CG Yoda has held up over the years, but it was really cool to see all the work that went into making him look as much like a puppet as they could while still having the freedom that CG gave them.
His ears will even wiggle when he moves his head.
That exactly kind of, even talking about like, oh, the lip sync can't be too perfect because it needs to feel like Frank Oz's hand is inside his head.
Uh-huh.
His lips can't be perfect, like look like a person's mouth moves. It needs to move a little bit like a puppet. It needs to be sort of somewhere in between. And they were like, we're using Empire Strikes Back as the reference and all this kind of stuff. It's maybe 25 minutes long. It's not super long.
But that's super interesting.
From Puppets to Pixels. Look it up if you can. If I can find it, I'll throw it in the show notes. We'll see.
That's pretty awesome.
You guys will know if I found it or not.
While you're doing that, I'm going to wrap this episode up by saying that you can find us on the internet at beerwithgeeks.com or Gmail, Twitter, and Facebook at Beer with Geeks. You can also check out all other Thought Bubble Audio shows at thoughtbubbleaudio.com, including Supergirl TV Talk, Academy Rewind, Hate Watch with Us, and Starkville's House of L, where they talk about Krypton on Sci-Fi.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, you do. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, and you can find us all the places podcasts can be found, including Google Play, Stitcher, Satchel, and Overcast. You can also head over to patreon.com/thoughtbubbleaudio and hand over at least a minimum of $1 for some of your hard-earned money to keep our lights on and to keep the shows running, and to make sure that when Frank breaks a glass, as he almost just did, off air, off mic, that we can afford to buy new ones to make sure that we can still drink beer.
That's right.
Wonderful job. So, if that's all I have to say.
That's all I have to say.
Well, this has been a wonderful talk of Blade Runner / the state of
effects in movies.
All right. Until next time. Cheers.